Mitzvah Resh Chaf Ches 228. You have it there?
Yes.
Okay. Shelo Lashok, not to be Oshek. So what does that mean? Shelo Nachzig Mamasha Yiya Biyadeinu Mizulasenu Derech Ones O Derech Dechia Veramos. We shouldn't hold on to something that we have in our possession that really belongs to something else by dealing in a manner of forcing them not to take it back or pushing them off. Or can you close the door, please. Thank you. Or cheating. Kimo anshi oven shedochim bnei adam leimor lahem lech v'shuv kedei l'saviv sheishar lahem mashe biyadam mizulasam. So somebody, you have somebody else's stuff in your possession, and they come and say, "No, give me my stuff back." And you say, "I'll come back tomorrow. And I can't get it right now, you know." And they just come back tomorrow because you really want to keep using it or have it around, whatever. Oh, sorry, next week. No, please, just come get it for me next week. Just keep going that so in order to just keep it. This is a very terrible character trait. So the Torah distanced us from this particular character trait with this pasuk. The lo sa shokes recha. You should not do this to your friend. So the technical definition of the term oshek means this, that you hold on to someone else's money.
But he says only to your friend you shouldn't do
it. Doesn't say no, recha generally means any person.
Neighbor.
I mean, sometimes it refers to any Jew. Ubechlal oshek, who gamkein l'kol shechayev l'chavero mamon me'uyan ve'oshek oso. And this applies also to someone who owes another person a certain money, a certain monetary object of monetary value, and oshiks him. Kigon kovesh schar sachir v'chayotzibo. So even, says the Sefer HaChinuch, you don't actually have something that, I took this the Sefer HaChinuch from Mrs. Birnbaum, and I said, you know, I'll come back to get it later. I'm still using it. Come back to get it later. But even if it didn't originally belong to her, but I owe her something. So let's say I just happened to owe her a debt of a certain amount of money, or let's say she did a certain work for me, and I owe her, then I was supposed to pay her money. So even if I say, oh, yeah, I'll pay you later, you know, just come back tomorrow, next week, no, and next month, whatever, I don't have it right now. If I keep doing that, even if I owe money, even if I don't actually have something of hers in my possession, it's still a violation of Oshik. So the Oshuked person does not actually have to have something of monetary value in the possession, but rather, it even could be something that the person who's doing the Oshik owes the other person. Is not giving it over.
I realize I came in a couple minutes late, which I apologize. But this business about, oh, next week, tomorrow, whatever.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not just the convenience, it's power. You like want to hassle a person. I've seen that. It's like you keep teasing them and you keep emphasizing that you still have their thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's even more annoying than the, oh, if you just would say up front, oh my goodness, I'm not quite finished with it. Can I have it till tomorrow?
Yeah, but that's not what it's talking about, obviously.
That's not what it's talking about. It's exactly.
If you ask permission and the person gives you permission, that's not Oshik. Yeah, he says, no, I want it back now. Okay, I don't have it. I can't give it to you. Yeah, whatever. Even if the person has a monetary claim and not exactly something in monetary value, alamos means that you just want to hassle a person, like you say, just that you want to have us be strong-armed. Sheishbo, o kol tzad ramos, any type of cheating or trickery, nikra oshik, this is all called oshik. Be'afal bisha oshik v'azikzela v'agneva inyan echadhu. So you can ask me a question. Why do we need all these mitzvos that discuss not taking someone else's money? Oshik, gzela, and geneva are all one thing. They mean that you are holding on to someone else's object or money without permission.
But you plan to give it back. I mean, maybe you're just saying that you plan to give it back, but you...
Yeah, but stealing, even intending to give back, is also a sir. It's the same thing. Yeah. Even if I steal someone's watch and I'm just saying, oh, I'm just going to use it for a couple of years and I'm for sure going to give it back. That's stealing.
Said I give it back tomorrow.
Right, you have to give it back as soon as possible. Inyan echad hu, im heyoshe ha-maise cholok zemizeh. So there's all really the same idea, even though the exact manner in which it's carried out is different. Ki kavana shloshdan shelo yikach ha'adam mamon mizulaso mishum tzad. Shouldn't take money or something of monetary value from somebody else. Anyway. Lefisha b'shlosha drachim elu yachmesu b'nei adam zezeh. But since these are three distinct ways in which a person could cause monetary harm to someone else, so therefore the Torah describes it each separately. Rava Amar, so Rava says in Maseches Bava Metzia, Zehu Oshek Zehu Gezel. It's the same thing. Oshek and Gezel is basically the same. To violate it to Lavin when you do it. So you could be over, if you do this, you could be violate Gzela as well as Oshek. Uperajinian said, why does God sometimes want us to be violate two lavin when it comes to these types of things? Vikar hatam lefi daiti hu mishnei tzadim. The reason is twofold. Ha'echad shekol sheratza ha'keel baruch hu laharchig menu letovaseinu richu gadol. That God wants to distance us from these bad behaviors a very great distance. Here, Balanubo as Haros Rabos. So, therefore, there are many different specifications about how we're supposed to distance ourselves since it's so important that we do so. The Odlanu to Elis, Nimtza Beriboy as Haros. There's another benefit when it comes to the increasing the number of negative commandments. The Hukmosh Amr Zichron Alivracha, Shirotza Hamoko Mazakos is Yisrael, Afika Chir Bahele Mitzvos. As we know from the famous thing that we always say when we want to say Kaddish Derabanan, because the Shaila is the way whether you say Kaddish Derabanan after learning Halacha or after learning Agada only. So if you have a whole Shir and you're learning Halacha and you want to say Kaddish Derabanan afterwards, so just to be sure, so we say a little passage of Agada, so we have the Halacha and the Agada, so we can say Kaddish Derabanan. So what we always say is Hanani Mekash Omer.
Hashem
100%, that God wanted us to have merits. So therefore, God gave us extra mitzvahs. The more mitzvahs we perform, the more merit that we have. So, for example, let's say you refrain from doing Oshek, and you refrain from doing Zela, and you refrain from doing Gneva. So you get thrice the reward. Great. It doesn't mean... You might think that only applies to positive commandments. So God gave us lots of commandments that we're supposed to pay on time, we're supposed to wear tefillin, we're supposed to daven, all these things. So part of the reason that there's so many of them is because if we fulfill them, then we get extra reward. So not only is it positive commandments, or you do more actions, you get a reward, but if you refrain from doing wrong things, then you also get more of a reward, which is very interesting, yeah?
How do we know God's accounting methods?
Because it says in the mitzvos.
It says.
What do you mean?
Good question.
What do you mean? The number of mitzvos.
Where does it say that?
Well, the Torah has a certain number of mitzvos.
Okay.
So even though there are a lot of mitzvos, for example, that most people don't want to violate. I mean, you might be tempted to steal a little bit sometimes. Most people don't go around stealing all the time. And we just got finished at the end of last parsha with all the arayos, that most of those people that they're forbidden because of arayos are not people anyone would have an interest in having relations with. So therefore, right, normally. So therefore, anybody who refrains from doing all these things, and they don't want to, they still get reward for fulfilling all the mitzvahs of the Torah.
I just find it, it's not amusing, it's actually, I find it a little annoying, when people say, blah, 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 do this and that, and I got a mitzvah. Shouldn't we be thinking, I did a mitzvah? Like, it's like this point system, like brownie points. It really...
I mean, it sort of is. I mean, it's not so...
Teacher's pet, brownie points, I got a mitzvah.
Well, we're supposed to do as many mitzvahs as possible. So I'm saying, even though, let's say there's a mitzvah that's not obligatory at all times, like visiting the sick, for example. It's when you choose to do it.
Right.
Like visiting the sick. There's no mitzvah that you have to go visit a sick person every day. Right, there's no limit. Right, and there's no minimum either. You do it when you can.
Right.
So, therefore, if you want, since it's within your power to choose when you do it, so the more times you go visit the sick, you're right, the more mitzvahs you quote-unquote get.
Yeah.
You do get more points for that. Okay. I mean, yeah. Maybe it balances out. Maybe a person is concerned about other averus that they did, so they go visit the sick more, so they wanted to cancel it out.
Who knows?
You know, we don't know the exact accounting system, you're right, and to that extent. But why not? If you're, you know, if you could, people can take all the mitzvahs they can get.
I was just reading something the other day in some film publication, I no longer recall what it was, that actually it doesn't quite work like that way, that, oh, I did a lot of bad things, I better do a lot of good things to cancel them out. It doesn't really cancel them out. You shouldn't have done them in the first place.
Right, of course it doesn't erase it, but
no,
it helps with the cheshbon.
It helps probably helps your overall rap sheet.
Right, 100%. Shehir Balema Azharos Harbe Mamasha Yiya Efshalo Diabas Harachas. In other words, God could have just said, don't have anyone else's money in your possession or my our objects if they don't want them to be there. That would have been simpler. Kimo Bechan Shay Efshalas Irenu Derakla Lok Sikhu Mamon Mizulaskem Shalokadin. Don't take someone else's objects of monetary value, not according to what's you're entitled to. When this rabu as haros lanu bedover kedush nekabos char harbi al prisha min haveros. I said, so you say, ah, I didn't do oshek, I didn't do gneva, I didn't do gzela. Ah, I'm three times a tzaddik as opposed to right.
I didn't murder anybody today.
Right, exactly.
Every day I get another mitzvah. I didn't murder somebody, even if I wanted to.
Right, mokein bechol makom. Shiyomru zichronim levracha lavor ala baharbi lavin kein nefarish adavar. So that's when it says that you violate two mitzvahs when you do this, two lavin, three lavin, whatever. Then this is how we explain it. Jain lefarish chalila, you could say, sheyirtzak he'lovo ba'alila abir Yosef, that God wanted extra excuses when you go up to the heavenly court to say, oh, this you did wrong, and this you did wrong, and this you did wrong. But God, you expressed it in three different mitzvahs. I only did one thing. Why should I be chayev three times? That's not the point. The ikar point, I mean, maybe that's going to happen anyway, eventually, but automatically. But for the shelchein sheyir behinokim aleihem, that God wants to extract extra vengeance. No, that's not true. Ki chafetz Hashem baruch hu v'aruch shmo lezakos b'yosef lo lechayev, that God prefers to confer merits upon us. I mean, sometimes it's not possible because people do the wrong thing. But in general, the main thrust is to confirm mitzvahs, merits rather than punishments. But Yizari Zosam Zirus Achar Zirus Laman Yilmadu Yikumusar Visku Barchakosa Bisrachka Min Aver Zuchus Rav. That the main idea is, oh, if you think I'm going to violate two lavin if I do this, so if it's really bad, so then maybe I really should be extra strong and not do it. I should overcome my Yetzer Hara. So that's why, because it's more of an encouragement, a zeros, to refrain from doing it, as opposed to the point being to extract extra punishment.
It's educational.
Right. V'zeh tam liyodei das dvash v'chalov. This is the reason for those who know knowledge and milk and honey. What's milk and honey? The Torah is called milk and honey, so I don't know why. I mean, not everybody who knows the Torah knows this, but people who go under the surface and really experience the sweetness of learning Torah in depth, they basically, the Tevrachina says, you'll basically come to my understanding about the purpose of the numerous mitzvot that were here. So since it says in Shir HaShir, Dvash v'cholov tachas l'shonech, there's milk and honey under your tongue, so therefore, the Torah was called Dvash v'cholov. That's one of the allegorical things in Shir HaShirim. That's why he says that people who know milk and honey are people who know the Torah. That's also the reason, of course, that one of the reasons
that Israel was called
Zavas Chalav Udvash. No, not exactly, but land flowing with Torah. No, that's not exactly what it means. It means literally milk and honey. But that's why on Shavuos we eat foods, sweet milchik foods. Dvash v'chalav. So if you eat cheesecake, so that's
two.
That's the sweet milchik food, so that's very delicious and it goes down very easily. So there, that's why, because that's to give us the idea. If we think that this is the Torah, which is allegorized as milk and honey, so we're gonna experience the sweetness. We're gonna internalize the sweetness of Torah, rather.
Even if it's made out of cashews or nuts,
of course you're not yotze. Yeah, there's no Indian to eat. Parva cheesecake on Shavuos. I mean, you may if you want, but you're not yotze any minag by that. It has to be the davka.
It is a minag.
You have to be davka milchiks. Davka milchiks. It's just a minag. It's not an. I mean, It's a strong minhag. It's a very old old minhag, but it's not an absolute requirement. Obviously, if somebody cannot tolerate dairy products, you do not have to eat dairy products on Shavuos. But it's nice to have a little bit just to be yotzei the minhag.
Is there any source which says that the reason we do that is because the Jews had not known the laws of milchiks and fleishiks, and mm-hmm. therefore, is there a source?
Yeah, the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch bring such a reason. That is the in commemoration of Matan Torah. That when the Jews didn't know the laws of Shechita yet, so they had no choice but to eat milchiks at the time of Matan Torah. The reason that's brought in the Shulchan Aruch by the Rama is really a zecher l'shtei halechem. That has nothing to do with sweet milchik foods. That's to do with the fact that on Shavuos they offered two korbanos with bread. So what you have to do, shtei halechem, what you do according to the Rama actually is that when you have your suda on the first day Shavuos, so remember, according to the Rama, the only inyan of eating milchiks is on the first day morning. So not like the people who have milchiks for all four sudas on Shavuos, or five, one of the days is on Shabbos. But
the morning, not right? The morning, so he says
not the lunch,
right? Because the morning is the closest to the Torah reading, presumably. No, the first the lunch, first day lunch, that's the morning suda.
Not the first day, not the first night.
No. Not according to the Rama. I mean, there are other people who had different practices. I'm saying the way it says in Shulchan Aruch, the way it's recorded by the Rama, is that the whole minhag is a remembrance of Shtei Alechem. So what you do is you start the Suda out with, you make hamotzi, and you have a milchik appetizer. And then, you have to, then of course, nobody has only milchiks during their whole Suda on Yantif. Now we want to have fleishiks. So what we're going to do, we're going to bring out the fleishiks. So what do we have to do? We have to take away... No, you have to walk around the block. We're going to take away the bread that was used with our milchik appetizer, and we're going to bring new bread to eat our fleishiks with.
So what do you do with the bread, the milchik bread, the quasi-milchik?
If you finish it, you can finish it then, or you put it in the freezer for another time.
You don't even need to, rinse out your mouth
or
anything.
But can you eat it with...
You need to... You rinse out your mouth, but it could just be by eating something. Oh. Eating something else in between. You need a piece of bread in between, So that's why it's Zeichel L'Shtei Alechem, because in the first, according to the Rama, in the first morning meal of Shavuos, you need to have two breads. You need to eat from two different loaves of bread in order to have the Suda, because you have the milchik appetizer and the fleishiks later in the meal.
But does that bread really become dairy? I mean, you couldn't have it later with a
nowadays, people are more fastidious. So we have separate bread, everything, and you're going to make hamotzi, and you're going to put it in a nice little basket in the middle, and people are going to take with their, hands maybe, and then eat with a fork. So not, but in the olden days, you have to remember, people are taking the bread. People were, eating with milchiks. They were touching the cheese. They were doing all sorts of things. So the bread would really become more milchik than it is nowadays.
But in the most times,
so I know someone, actually, who on Shavuos in the morning meal, so he takes the bread that they made hamotzi on during the milchik appetizer and dips it into the milchik stuff and just uses it to actually eat the milchiks. Therefore, you really have to make a redin, bring a second bread. But that's only one of the reasons. We don't even really, even though the Rama says this reason, it's just one of the reasons that most people are not makbid to have milchiks and fleishiks in the same meal. Also because it's under the influence of the Zohar, that the Zohar says that you're not supposed to have milchiks and fleishiks in the same meal at all, even though Meikar Adin, like the Rama says, if you eat the milchiks first and then the fleishiks afterwards, so that's fine. There's no even waiting period in between. The Zohar doesn't like having milchiks and fleishiks in the same meal within the same hour, different ideas of what that's talking about. But that's the normal practice nowadays is to have just some of the meals of Shavuos to be milchik, because at least that's based on the other reasons, that because of Matan Torah, because of Dvash V'Cholov. So...
But the basic principle of when you have challah, let's say, at a fleishiks meal, you have to put it away and mark it fleishiks.
So that's the classical psak, But like I said, it's a little bit questionable. If you're very careful, you just cut up some pieces, you put them in the middle, and it doesn't really touch any fleishiks. So then, people are still nizzer about that.
Put it in a basket and pass it around.
People are still nizzer about that, but yeah, it's a good question. People always have these questions about whether they're allowed to make French toast with the leftover challah from Shabbos. We're talking about the stuff that's in the basket, right? The stuff, if there's stuff, that there's loaf on the table that was untouched, you just cut off a part and then you put the rest away, so that's for sure fine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the Minchas, the Darkei Tshuva, I think, which is a commentary on Yoredeya by the Minka Cheruv. That was the one we call the Minka Cheruv, his father.
That was the anti-Zionist.
the father of the anti-Zionist one. He wasn't, the father wasn't as anti-Zionist as the son. That's what they say. Anyway, so he says...
It really works that way.
So I like this...
Correct.
I like this shita of the Darkei Tshuva. It's what I normally do myself, which is that on Shavuos, instead of splitting the meal, it gets too complicated, whatever. So you have just a milch... Also, according to Ramar, like I said, it's only on the first day lunch. But most, many, according to the other reasons, there's no reason to be dafka on the first day. That any time we milchik sanchuas is a zecher to dvash v'chalav or matan Torah or whatever. But the still the main thing the poskim bring is on the first day. So you have, conveniently, it works very well with our shul, that you have a milchik kiddush in the morning and then the suda shleishik. That's the way I like to do it. In yeshiva, what we used to do, because nowadays, we in our shul, we don't stay up all night, but when I was in yeshiva, and everybody used to stay up all night, so what they used to do is they would have two sudas. They would have a breakfast right after davening really, really early in the morning, where they would serve milchiks, and then everybody would go to sleep, and after the nap, they would come up, wake up and have fleishiks for lunch. That's a little bit much for most people who don't stay up all night, so just milchik kiddush with the cheesecake, and then fleishik suda later. The four milchik sudas really is not so.
At what point do you make kiddush?
What do you mean?
I mean, after davening, you stay up all night.
We have kiddush in shul.
You make kiddush, you have milchiks, and then lunch you don't make kiddush because you already made kiddush at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, right? At lunchtime you don't make kiddush.
Well, that's questionable. Maybe you have to make
you might make it for the people who didn't stay
right. But so what? It's not totally in the kiddush per se. It's doing the suda. That the Yantiv Suda should be Fleishik, and then for it to be Yotze de Minag, so you have a Kiddush in the morning.
Right. So then, if you had the Kiddush in the morning, then you make Kiddush.
Right, so.
You don't make Kiddush at lunch.
So what?
Okay.
First of all, I don't hold like that. I think you should make Kiddush by the Suda where you eat bread.
Okay.
Always. On Shabbos morning.
Oh, because you're not eating bread, you're just making
right.
Bread. Okay.
So I think it's.
Think when you know there's more of a halachic reason for that.
There's a halachic reason.
But you Mekadesh Shabbos, you do it once a day. Why do you have to do it every time you sit down to eat?
They're two different. Okay, we're getting a little bit far afield, but I can talk about it for a minute if you want. So, I mean, we'll discuss it more at length when we have I'll speak about it because we're talking about the Seder of Shabbos. We're going through Shabbos in my Shiur Mitzvah Mincha Marav and Shabbos afternoon, so we'll get to this in more detail. But basically, the idea is that, first of all, the Kiddush Shabbos morning is really in honor of the Suda. And as opposed to, it's a totally different nature as the nighttime Kiddush. Nighttime Kiddush is a bracha in honor of Shabbos, and you have to eat the Suda right afterwards, because it gives extra honor to the Kiddush and extra honor to the Suda. It's more of a two-way street. The Kiddush Shabbos morning is really in honor of the official meal of Shabbos. So there's the question is that we know you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush on Friday night, because that's a real mitzvah with the bracha Mekadesh HaShabbos and everything. So, but the Kiddush Shabbos morning is just really the bracha Bari Pri HaGafen. There's no real bracha of Shabbos associated with it. So you already made Kiddush Friday night, so it's a shahol big machlokes rishonim as to whether or not you're allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning. So a lot of Rishonim hold that you're allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning. Oh. But we normally assume, we're machmer like the Rambam, and there are certain other shittas, that you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush Shabbos morning, so therefore we have our little snacks in shul, the concept of what we call kolik, we call a Kiddush, so we make Kiddush before that to avoid any problems of eating before Kiddush. But the question is, maybe you should really make Kiddush. That doesn't really work, because the real Kiddush is in honor of the meal. So you should really make Kiddush at the meal, when you're at the table, when you're actually having your bread meal. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is that there's a shita in the Geonim. There is a shita, by the way, that you're not allowed to eat even before Kiddush by day, before the Kiddush at the bread meal. So that's something to consider. But that's a chumra yaseira, I think. In my opinion, that's too much of a chumra, because most Rishonim anyway hold an out deep over Kiddush Shabbos day. So you make Kiddush, and then you eat, and then you make Kiddush again by the meal, so that's okay. But the Iker Kiddush is really at the meal. The first Kiddush that we make here in Shul is kind of fake. It's really just in order to be Yotze the problem of eating before Kiddush. So that's why it's appropriate to make Kiddush really by the actual bread meal. Though saving grace is There's a sheet on the Geonim when it comes to Kiddush B'Makom Suda, that if you start the meal, if you make Kiddush and you drink a revius of wine, you drink like a whole cup of wine, or you have, according to some sheet, this even if you have fruit, or we assume that even if you have mizonos, also if you have cakes, that constitutes Kiddush B'Makom Suda. So according to the Geonim, then if you start your meal with bread, I'm sorry, with cake, or with drinking a whole cup of wine, then you're Yotzei Kiddush B'Makom Suda, then you're allowed to go have your meal somewhere else right away. So there's what to be said that if you have Kiddush and Shul, and you have some cake or you have a whole cup of wine, then you go home right away and you have your bread meal, so the Kiddush that you made in Shul is still shayach in some way to your bread meal.
That's why sometimes people have guests from different places. Does anybody need to hear Kiddush?
Because but that's questionable, so I think that you should make Kiddush again. Why not? Now that we also nowadays we're a Jewish community is better off, so we have tons of wine. You can afford to make pour another cup of grape juice or a cup of wine and make Kiddush again by the meal. It certainly can't hurt. You might have guests who didn't hear Kiddush. Also, we normally assume people think that you make Kiddush, then you have your cake. And you're Yotzei Kiddush B'Makom Suda, that's it. So that's not really how it's classically formulated in the Geonim. What the Geonim say is they have this kula that is still considered Kiddush B'Makom Suda if you have cake and then or wine and then you immediately go elsewhere and have your meal. It's as if this was the start of your meal. But let's say you daven hashkama. Let's say shug, this is a good example of Shuas morning. You have Kiddush Shuas morning, you have your cake, you don't have your bread meal yet. And you go to sleep for 3 or 4 hours before you go have your meal. So that can't be considered a start of the meal.
No.
So you can't rely on that Kiddush for the meal itself. So that there's even more of a reason specifically to have Kiddush by the meal. And even the more so, let's say you just want to make Kiddush in the morning to avoid the problem of eating before Kiddush. And you don't have bread or cake, which is what I often do, that I don't have cake at the Kiddush. Because I'm going to cheat on my diet, I'd much rather have my wife's cakes than the commercial cakes that we have here in Shul, as good as they might be. But anyway, so if I'm not going to have cake, I don't want to drink necessarily so much wine, so therefore I wasn't really Yotzei Kiddush B'Makom Suda at all when I make Kiddush in Shul. So therefore I definitely have to go have a Kiddush again when I go home. So you could argue, so you're not supposed to be making Kiddush if you're not having bread or you're not having wine or so much wine or cake right away. But since there are many Rishonim that hold, they are allowed to eat before Kiddush anyway, Shabbos morning, so it's not necessarily such a terrible idea. Or Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva like that also, that he says that you're allowed to make Kiddush and then eat whatever you want. You don't necessarily have to eat cake or drink wine, and then you, as long as you make Kiddush again by the meal. So again, making Kiddush again by the meal gets you out of a lot of problems. So I'm a big fan. Again, we were very makatze. We'll discuss it in much more depth in our shirim and between Menachem Marv and Shabbos, but
the wine or here, you know, or eat the cake. What about if you don't? You don't.
That's another thing. Mrs. Hirsch holds like the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav had a chiddush that even though, according to the majority of poskim, there's a minority of shita not like this, but according to most poskim, you're Yotzei Kiddush Friday night, even if you don't drink any wine, even if you just hear it. But the Brisker Rav held that it didn't make sense Shabbos day, because on Shabbos day, there's no bracha to be yotzei al hakos. It's just a bari pri hagafen. That's the only bracha that you make. So the whole point was to drink wine, to make a bari pri hagafen, and to drink wine before the meal. That gives extra honor to the meal of Shabbos. So the Brisker Rav had a chiddush, that poskim hold not like this, but the Brisker Rav said that if you don't drink by kiddush by day, then you're not yotzei. You should drink by Kiddush by night also. There is a, because everybody agrees that it's better to do that. It's a mitzvah min ha-muvchar, but there is a minority opinion that if you don't drink Kiddush by night, then you're not Yotze either. So you definitely should drink Kiddush by night also. But Kiddush by day, Brisker Rav held, you're not Yotze at all if you don't drink. So most people, when they hear Kiddush in Shul, they don't drink. So not that we necessarily have to run to follow every Brisker Rav, but this does make a certain amount of sense. And that's another reason that a Kiddush at home, so then everybody drinks before the meal, which is more correct for Kiddush by day, for both Kiddushim, but especially for Kiddush by day. So again, that's an excellent point. That's another reason that you really should make Kiddush right before your meal, as opposed to just relying on the Kiddush and Shul. 100%. Okay, so how does this have to do with taking someone else's money? Shorish HaMitzvah Yadua. that the reasoning of the mitzvah is well known. Ki hu min ha-mitzvah she-ha-seichel mechayev osan. That this is self-understood as to why this is requirement for the proper functioning of society. Dinei ha-mitzvah be-vavakama. It's found in Maseches Vavakama of Ikar be-perek tishi be-perek asiri. In the 9th and 10th parakim, which discuss the rules of theft. Benoah Yisrael zeh b'chol makom v'chol zman in all places and all times. Over alav v'oshak eschavero over alav zeh. If you do it, then you violate this commandment. V'ulav anitak laseh. You have to give back the money. It's connected to a positive commandment. Kilomar sheyoshiv achamos asher b'chapa v'yiratz eschavero al sheknito v'chiso. So not only do you have to give back the money, but you have to beg forgiveness for the fact that you were such a jerk, that you didn't give back the person's money. So he says the Sefer Chinuch is patting you on the head in case you engaged in oshek. He says, you know, it's really bad, but if you do proper repentance and you ask for forgiveness, then you can repent from this sin, even though it's so terrible. So the question is, the Minchas Chinuch says, points out that non-Jews are also not allowed to do Oshek, and that's even though there's no one of the prohibition of Oshek is not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach per se. It falls for the categories for non-Jews are a bit more expansive, so they are not allowed. It falls under the category of theft that they're not allowed to do. They're not allowed to take possession of someone else's money without permission. The Rav Tzarfati, the French rabbi, who's the French what? You think it's Rashi, but it's not Rashi. It's talking about Kosev b'Cheshbon Mitzvos. It's talking about the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Godol, who basically also mostly, right? There's nobody hardly ever learns it anymore, but it used to be a very important Sefer that people. I mean, it still is very important, but people used to learn it more. That it's actually found if you look in the Gemara, you have what's called on the side of the margin. You have the Ein Mishpat. So the Ein Mishpat tells you, it has little notes. When there's a line in the Gemara that reflects a halacha, how we paskin lemaisa, so it tells you where in the classical law codes this law is recorded.
Right. So in the classical what?
Law codes. Codes of law?
Law codes.
Yeah. So it includes in the Ein Mishpat, it gives you the references to the Rambam, the Torah and Shulchan Aruch, which is the same. The same, I mean, not the same book, but the same organization. And the Smag. So those are the big three, even though there are tons of other halakha codes potentially in the Rishonim that mention different things. The Smag used to be only considered one of the big four law codes. But he basically follows the Rambam and everything, more or less, with very occasional departures, as we'll see here. So sometimes he has interesting things to say, also in terms of the way that he paraphrases the Rambam. So you saw that he learned the Rambam in a particular way. Sometimes he explains it, and it's useful as an explanation of the Rambam, as opposed to necessarily his own personal halachic approaches. Mikevan de Ashkechan de Amar Rava de Oshek v'Gezel Chadu. So we saw above that the Sefer HaChinuch quoted the Gemara that said that Rava said that Oshek is Gezel. So you violate two lavin. So Rava said, no, it's like other things. The way he interprets Rava, rather, is the Oshek v'Gezel Huchad, that they're one thing. Lo nimna lav the Oshek v'minyan alavin. He doesn't count Oshek as a mitzvah. Because Rava said they're one and the same, as Oshek and Gezel are one and the same. So even though he said over there, lo lav or alav b'shnei lavin, that you violate two negative commandments if you do Oshek and Gezel, you still, it's like any other thing, where sometimes it says, well, if you do such and such a thing, so you're over a certain number of lavin. Like it says, Chazal say in certain times, you know, if you don't wear tzitzis, you're over on five assays. Because, not that you're literally over, violate five positive commandments, it's one positive commandment, but since it's mentioned in five different ways in the Torah, so it gives it extra severity and extra gravitas. And that's why, that's what this Chazal are driving it over here. So this is what the Sefer Chinuch, Sefer HaMitzvos, Sefer Smag, Sefer Mitzvos Gadol. Says, so what he doesn't count Oshik as a separate mitzvah in the minion of 613 mitzvahs, he counts instead, and he shall not be like Korach and his assemblage. So what does that mean? So the Torah says that put the fire pans of Korach and his assemblage as a covering for the altar, so that people will see it, and they will not be like Korach and his assembly. So what is the simple pshat in the pasuk is not that it's a mitzvah. It says these things should be on the altar in order to remind people not to be like Korach. It's not saying a commandment not to be like Korach, but Chazal say no, that this is it's merumas in this. It's hinted at even in this phraseology that you're not allowed to be like Korach. So what does that mean? Kilomar shelo nachzik b'machlokas. We're not allowed to get up and cause divisions, cause fights within the Jewish people. We're not. I think I had a drasha once about this, and I said that Jewish people are not too good about this mitzvah. But it's important. Yeah, it's very unfortunate, and we have to try to be. We have to be try to be nisar about it.
People care. They get very passionate.
Right. Udatenu anu ein kavanas rava shelo yimnu b'shnei lavin. The way I think, and the way the Rambam thought also, is that it doesn't mean that you don't count it as two negative commandments. Ela lavor begezel b'shnei lavin uva oshe gamkein. That you violate two lavin, whether it's you're talking about oshek or gezel, because oshek and gezel are sort of interchangeable. So it means that whether you do either one, you literally violate two negative commandments. But lemaisa, they're two different things. It's not one thing with two different facets. They're totally different things. It's just they're sort of interchangeable in a way, but they're really, the action is different. So you can make the argument too, says the Sefer HaChinuch. Like gzela and gneva are also basically the same idea. Nevertheless, they're for sure two separate mitzvos because they're accomplished in separate ways. What's gneva?
By stealth.
Right, Gneva is by stealth, and Gzela is robbery. So there's the same idea. Wow. Mm-hmm. You get, if somebody does, don't steal other people's things. So you get the same. You get the idea. You're now to do Gzela or Gneva. Not to take possessions from someone else. No one ever doubted the fact that Gzela and Gneva counted as two separate mitzvahs, and we're counting the 613 mitzvahs. And speaking of Gzela, let's just get started on this quickly. We have a few more minutes. So mitzvah Reish Chavtes, 229, shelo ligzol, not to rob. Shelo ligzol, kilomar shelo nitol ma she'ein lanu zchus bo b'choach uvizroa b'pirsum. So what does it mean not to rob? That we shouldn't take something to which we are not entitled with strength and with arms. Zroa literally means arm, not arms like guns.
Oh, really?
It means like physically a body part. But piercing publicly.
Can you take something except with an arm? Hand.
It just means with strength. Uh-huh. In other words, to force someone to do it as opposed to just say, force them in other ways to give it to you. Shenemar, blackmail. Shenemar, that's also not allowed. Shenemar, velo sigzol, you shall not rob. So the received interpretation of Gzela is that it's something that you grab from someone else or take it out of his property against his will by forcing him to do it and publicly. I mean, not necessarily that you have to do it in front of 20 people, but that there's nothing to prevent anyone from seeing you. It's talking about Benayahu ben Yehoyada and Sefer Shmuel, that he fought once with an Egyptian. So he says he killed the Egyptian with his own spear, and how did he do that? He stole the spear from the hand of the Egyptian and then stabbed him with it. So obviously it's not talking about Gneva, that he stealthily broke into the Egyptian. It's talking about they're in armed combat. He ripped it out of the guy's hands, the Mitzri's hands, and he impaled him.
And this is what? This is Gzela?
That's Gzela. He stole the... I mean, it wasn't Usser. I'm saying this. Not that this was forbidden in this case. It was a legitimate battle, so he had to... doing anything he could.
He just used the word.
Yeah. Right.
Took it.
So the reason that he uses the word Gzela in this case instead of Gneva is that... He obviously ripped it out of his hands, and everybody was watching. Or people could have been watching. Shoresh HaMitzvah Yaduah. The reasoning is understandable. Shehu davar shaseichel marchiko harbe v'roy larchiko. That intelligence would totally distances itself from this, and it's as is appropriate. Yadua hagozel hacholosh mimenu ki bevor alav takiv menu hu gamkein hayagamkein nigzal v'yisib al chorban ayishuv. So basically, he's breaking it down into do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Because you might think, I am 7 feet tall, and I work out 5 times a week, and I weigh 300 pounds, and I'm all muscle, and I can steal from whomever I want, and nothing's ever going to happen to me. So why don't I just go around terrorizing people and taking whatever monetary possessions I want? So Zefer Chinuch says, well, there's a guy who's going to come along who's 7.5 feet tall and he weighs 400 pounds and he works out twice as much as you and he's going to be able to steal from you too. And if everybody went around stealing from each other, then they would the whole society would break down. And it's just would be impossible to function. Midine hamitzvah. The halachas are as follows: Mashav zichrono levracha, sheiser de'oraisa ligzol afilu kol shehu. It's a biblical prohibition even to take a tiny amount. Avalav de lo sigzol eino chal ela b'shavet bruta. All the technical details of lo sigzol in terms of when you have to return it and etc. only apply if you steal the value of a pruta. A pruta is the smallest coin that's halachically recognized. It's generally the smallest thing that's considered to be of monetary value. It's a very small amount of money. Nowadays, it's somewhere between a penny and a nickel, I think. It's tied into the price of silver, a certain weight of silver. Ki ha-Torah lo sechayev ela bedavar shehu mamon. So the Torah only starts dealing with monetary things in terms of how you have to return it and go to Beis Din, etc., when there is monetary value present. And the Torah doesn't consider something less than a pruta to be of monetary value. Upachos mishvei pruta eino nekra mamon. It's just not called money. Aval mikol makom osurhu dvar Torah. Nevertheless, even though less than a shvei pruta is not considered something of real monetary value according to the Torah, it's still a biblical violation to steal anything. Kemo chatzishir she'ein lokin alav v'hu iser deraisa. It's similar to the concept that we find in ritual prohibitions, where it's forbidden on a biblical level to do even a minute amount, but you only receive the penalty if you have a certain shear. Like, you're not allowed to eat the tiniest taste of a pork chop, but nevertheless, you only receive malchus if you eat a kezias, the size of an olive. So it's the same idea over here, that you're over, it's a biblical violation of stealing if you steal any amount of money whatsoever, anything of monetary value, but the rules only start to come into play of gezeila per se if it's a shvei pruta, yeah?
I'm wondering, you could have something that's not worth a pruta in money, but it could be worth something in other ways. For instance, supposing in my house I have a letter that my beloved teacher wrote to me, and somebody decides, oh, I would love to have that. Well, it's only worth, it's not worth anything financially, but you're stealing something that really belongs to me.
100%.
So even if it's not worth a pruta.
That's Nisa Daraisa, but it wouldn't be.
It's one piece of paper, but it's a paper that my beloved teacher wrote me a nice letter on. And
Well, I don't know, vintage paper from the...
I'm not talking about...
When did you go to high school? In the 90s? Vintage paper from the
90s. When I went to high school.
So it was...
the 50s.
I'm saying, but vintage paper, okay, say from the 50s, is maybe worth more than a pruta. I don't know.
No.
You have to see how much that could potentially be
worth. It's a notebook paper.